Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Caravan Central official podcast number 213 for Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. I'm Steve Witchell in New Orleans.
Tony B coming to you from New Jersey. What's happening?
All right. What's going on? When I went live, this notification came up that said Facebook removed the ability to stream in groups. Allow third-party things to stream in groups as of April 22nd, which was yesterday, and I didn't know that. So that thing popped up, but then we're live. I'm like, oh, okay, and I didn't know we're live, so whatever. Anyway, how you guys doing out there? Welcome to the show.
Anyway, here we are, Steve.
Yes,
here we are.
If you're watching us live, come on in and say hello. Tell us where you're from, and we will say hello back and get you in on the conversation if you like. And if not, you could just sit there and listen and watch. If you're listening on the audio podcast, thank you for doing so. And you can watch the video version on the Facebook page, Cover Band Central, or the YouTube channel. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel. The link is in the description. Also in the description is the link to my ebook, Get Them to the Show. That's the URL for it, getthemtotheshow.com. It teaches you how to build your online audience and build, you know, your following to people of people that actually will come see you play and support you and whatnot. It's very well worth the purchase. It's very cheap.
It's how to market yourself properly, Steve, for maximum engagement.
Correct. So you can get that. The link is in the description for that too, if you're interested. We had a week or two off. I can't even remember.
It's been a couple weeks, Steve, but it's been a busy time. How you been?
I've been good. Playing and keeping busy with Cover Band Central. I'm wondering, I was just thinking
about this.
I'm wondering how long we should keep doing this because we're not getting a whole ton of engagement as we're doing it live. And, you know, we started this kind of for fun many years ago. So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe change.
213 episodes ago, Steve.
Yes. So maybe change the frequency or come on in and chime in and say hello, people. So we know that you're out there listening and
say, hey,
watching
what's
up? And really dig what's going on here.
Listening and learning and loving it.
Yes. So what's been going on? Status quo really for me for gigs. I play every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on Bourbon Street at Bourbon Bandstand. From 2 o'clock in the afternoon to 6:15 in the evening. And it's good right now. It's a good time of year here in New Orleans. It's busy, but that will all change in a month after Memorial Day when it gets super hot here and nobody comes to New Orleans in the summer. But, you know.
So what does your gig schedule become once that time of year rolls around?
It should be the same. Yeah. Last year they took our Sundays away for all of, I think most of July and then all of August. So we only did Friday, Saturdays because it's super slow. I'm told that that's not going to happen this year, but we'll find out.
Indeed you will.
They don't give us much warning here. So I don't.
No, it seems to be like you said. kind of jump ball.
Yeah. They don't give us any warning. They just sometimes we'll show up and they'll be like, nah, you guys aren't playing today. Oh, well, thanks for letting us know.
Excellent.
Sometimes we'll show up and there's no the doors are locked and we can't even get in touch with anybody. To open.
And the club's just not open.
Yeah, that's happened before. Where we showed up and nobody even opened the club. And like, oh yeah, you guys weren't supposed to play today. Sorry, we didn't tell you.
Good times right there, Steve. Good times. Yeah.
So you know. We'll see. I was considering taking the summer off. Completely off of playing. But we'll see.
Getting a sub and then coming back in the fall?
Yeah. I don't know if I can do that. Maybe I can do that. We'll see. Maybe I want to. I don't know if I want to. Because, you know, I talk about it every year. It's just so hot here. And it's like, I don't really want to go out and play in the heat and be sweating my balls off every day. And, you know.
You don't have people with, like, those big palm leaves that wave them next to you while you're playing?
No.
Are you off in the summertime?
Where can I get those people? Where do
serving you like nice tall glasses of iced tea?
Where do I find those people?
I don't know. I just assume that you're affiliated with such types.
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
No, but if you know, if you have any connections, you know, hook me up.
I don't. That's why I was asking. I was hoping maybe you could help me with that.
Yeah.
It gets hot here too. Not as hot as down by you, but still hot enough where I could use some assistance like that.
Right.
Especially at the outdoor gigs, you know.
Anything new for you on the gigging front?
Yeah, well, end of an era for the OC5, right? So Ken Scarpa, our lead singer, he's departing. And we have a new gentleman, which we'll be unveiling on May 4th. And then we have a couple gigs with him in May. And then we're off for like a good 5 or 6 weeks. I think maybe end of June is when we get back in again. So we'll have some rehearsals because the one guy in the band is going to Scotland on like a big trip. So
Scotland. Oh, look here. We have a comment.
Bev Byron's in.
From Bev Byron. And it's a treble clef, a sunflower, some eighth notes, a couple guitars, another sunflower, and a tulip. Emojis. Yes. I don't know what that means. Does that form a sentence or a word?
That sounds like good times and positive vibes, Steve. That's what that says right there.
I like it. And the mystery machine, Scooby-Doo vehicle. In there.
Correct. In there. This way, there's also a mystery for you to decipher.
Right. Good stuff. So did you...
So new guy coming in, new songs, new agenda, you know, new era. So it's going to be fun.
Cool. Did you happen to sign up for my set or get a chance to peruse all that information?
I did not. We did speak about it, though. I did mention it with the boys in the band. They were very intrigued by it.
Okay.
You know, they might be open to doing something like that. Because like I said, we're really not a request band like that. But it's it may be something. I mean, like I said, just having a tip jar out front, you know, generates a significant amount of extra.
Right.
So if you had that app on top of that, it's just another avenue, just another vehicle to get, you know, people engaged and get some more tips out of it.
Yes.
Because you're going to play the songs anyway, right? So you might as well
play
them.
And what we're talking about is there's an app called My Set, in case anybody doesn't know, where you can have a QR code that you put out there and you hang up signs or you put them on the tables. And people out there in the audience can scan it, check out your entire song list, and then request songs and tip the band electronically through your phone, through the magic of, you know, whatever, Wi-Fi,
the magic,
Bluetooth, or whatever it is, and make yourself some extra income. And I've been using it for a couple of years, and it works great for us because we...
Steve is the master of it.
Yeah. Well, we take tips generally, cash tips anyway, and we take requests too. So that's something we use regularly, and it makes us a lot more money. So I partnered with My Set with Cover Band Central. So if you would like some information on that, if you don't already know about it, I'll put up my thing here. Send me an email, steve@coverbandcentral.com, and I'll give you the lowdown, put tips in the subject, and I'll give you the information on that. And it's all free. You get a 100%
free.
Yeah, you get to keep 100% of your tips, And it's yeah, there's no cost ever to you at all. So if you can take requests and or tips at your gigs, this is a no brainer to use. All right, so let's dive in. You just mentioned Scotland.
Excellent. Riddell's endorsed by Cover Band Central.
Yeah. You just mentioned Scotland, and I did an interview last week with this guy, Vaughn Fleischfresser, who lives in Scotland, and he's from Australia originally. And he is a music educator. And
I laddie, the pipes are calling.
Yeah. And I didn't put up the audio version of it on the on our podcast channel yet, but that's going to be coming up in a day or so. But the video is available on YouTube and on Cover Band Central. But I became aware of this guy because he's on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and he shares these memes all the time that are just kind of inspirational quotes about music education, about the benefits of it, how it helps kids or how it helps anybody in their life in general. And it is very good. You know, it's very good, quick little bits, kind of like the thing that you do every day with your emails. But he, you know, he posts them often, and I started sharing them, and you know, I would see them every day, like he posts every day. So I was like, I got to talk to this guy and find out. So I reached out to him and I said, you know, would you like to do an interview? And he said, yeah. So we did it last week, and super nice guy, very smart. And, you know, he's got the right idea about music education, about why it's important to people. And yeah. And he went from, he had like a couple thousand followers in December of 2023, and it jumped up to now he's got 25,000 followers just 4 months later. So something, you know, he had a bunch of them that went viral. So yeah, so if anybody's interested in that, you can check that out. But that'll segue into our topic today, which is music education, which we were going to talk about last week, kind of coupled with that, but we can talk about this week too. And how you and I both feel about it, what our history has been with it, and more so for you because you have kids who have learned how to play instruments. So you could probably talk more on this than I can. But I still feel like that was one of the reasons that I wanted to do Cover Band Central in the first place, was to, you know, tout the importance of music education, especially for kids. And, you know, it really benefited me as a kid, you know, learning how to play an instrument, and I'm sure you too. But to talk about how Chase and Cole got into first learning about music and playing, your two sons.
Well, you know, growing up, I was in the house of music, right? My dad played drums, and it was always in a band of some sort, whether it was a concert band or, you know, a big band or a jazz band or cover band or any of those. You know, he's always playing, or marching band or parades. So I was always exposed to it, you know, at a young age. So then, of course, growing up, you know, I had my own studio at my parents' house. You know, we used to rehearse there, and I had, you know, instruments and a PA. And so when I had moved out, I had taken all that stuff with me, and being a drummer, you know, every band that I ever played with was always rehearsals at my house, sure, because I had drums there, right? So just a natural progression of that became that, you know, the studio just grew in size. And then by the time my kids, you know, were growing, you know, were old enough to where, you know, we always had music in the house. Karen and I would always play music of all different, you know, music that we liked. So like Rush, yes, Genesis, you know, anything from 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. So the kids grew up, you know, listening to a wide array of music, and I had other relatives that played instruments, so we would get together and jam and play. So, you know, at a young age, both my boys showed an interest and had an ability to be able to play, you know, a natural ability to say, okay, like, you know, I teach in drums for 40 years, so it's, you know, you can recognize very quickly if someone has a natural ability to be able to play drums or not, you know, coordination-wise.
You say a young age, what age are you talking about?
I would say both of them were able. So probably four.
4 years old. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, 4 years old, because I had practice drum sets set up, and they were mini. They were little mini Mapex kits, because when I lived in Teaneck, I had smaller space, so I wanted two kits side by side. So I went to Walmart and bought like a wooden like artist stool that you would sit on to paint at an easel, and then I cut the legs down off it. Like, I, you know, it was like, say it was like 40 inches tall. I cut it down to be like 18 inches tall, and I made a mini drum seat out of it.
Oh.
And then I took one of the kits and I would just tilt all the toms down and the snare back. And then the kids were, they could sit on that stool. And then since I was given lessons at the house anyway, you know, they were always exposed to that. So I would give them a lesson and say, work on this and try to play this beat. And then I would slowly teach them how to read music and expose them to other things. And then as they got older, then they wanted to play in a talent show, you know? And I remember Cole specifically, well, back up, sorry. So also in school band, so they were always exposed to drums, but then once they got to school, there was snare drum, right? But there was also when, like, your first year of band in grammar school, you can't play drums. You have to play some sort of wind instrument.
Okay.
So both my boys played trumpet. So they had a year or two of trumpet in conjunction with playing drums at home. So at school, they got educated on notes, right? Scales, you know, right, how to play. And they played in the school band. You know, we would go to school concerts. They both played trumpet, you know, in ensemble. And they were both, you know, participants in, you know, the winter concert, right? And spring concert. And we would go, and I have old videotapes of that stuff. And they always played trumpet. And then as they got older, Cole stayed in band and then graduated to drums. Snare drum at that time, right? And then was on the drum line. And so they had music education straight through to high school. And then, you know, by the time I got to high school, Chase was into sports, right? Because he played a lot of different sports. So music was not on the front burner for him. And Cole wanted to be in the band, but as a prerequisite, if you were going to be in part of the band, you had to march. And it wasn't just marching at the games. It was like competition march.
Oh, boy.
So you couldn't be in jazz band or school band without marching. So he didn't want to march because, you know, like I said, he had a lot of other things going. But back when they were both younger, like when Cole was really young, I'm going to say maybe like third grade, fourth grade, they had talent show at school. And he had just started to learn how to play drums. So he was playing on the kit, but not much more than just, you know, two and four on the snare and keeping time on a hi-hat, right?
Right.
And, you know, because of the coordination of those things. So I remember we built him like his theme for his talent show was the one man band. And I built him a little mini rack with a bass drum and a snare drum with a double pedal. I mean, with two different pedals. So you had bass drum, a snare drum, and then for the hand part, there was no toms or anything. It was like a wood block, a cowbell, a couple of agogo bells, a cymbal, you know, like some percussion stuff. And so what he did was the stuff I gave him that I made him work on to practice was just to go like right foot, left foot, right foot, left foot. So it was going toon tat, toon tat, toon tat, toon tat, toon tat, toon tat, like kick snare, kick snare, kick snare, kick snare.
Right.
And then we made up patterns with the hands. And then he practiced them like melodies, you know, like Pop Goes the Weasel or something along that effect, you know, like just different, like almost like the Neil Peart cowbell solo, right? Like stuff like that with wood blocks. And so then he worked on that for probably a month before the talent show. And then by the time talent show time came, he played this one man band and did this little pre-rehearsed piece of music that was like, you know, 2 minutes long and had, you know, a beginning and a middle and an end and all these themes to it. And so then every year after that, he did the talent show, and then he just progressed. Then he learned how to play drum set better. So we came up with a drum solo. We came up with a groove. We came up with this, and he started building on that. And then, you know, the more he practiced, that was the main thing. He practiced a lot, right? Because he wanted to be able to flip the stick and catch it. And he kept practicing it to make sure that by the time the talent show came, he wasn't nervous about dropping it because he had flipped it 1,000 times in the basement. Mm-hmm. He was doing it while he was hanging out in his room. You know, he was like always working on it. So then you fast forward, he plays drums proficiently up to a point, and then he had this little toy piano in his room, like this little antique mini piano. It was probably maybe 20 inches wide. You know, and it had all the keys on it, but they were mini, right? And it had, and it all worked, and he would jam out in his room. And he said, you know, I would like, you know, could any of your friends have a keyboard that we could borrow or something like that? So I was playing in the band with Jim Uzella, and he had an old Korg, and I said, I'll buy it off him. So I gave him $100 for it. He sold it to me. We set it up downstairs, and then Cole started working on playing on like piano, going on YouTube, looking up piano. He had a kind of an understanding of it, and he started working on songs and learning, you know, different chords and progressions and whatnot. And long story short, then he just started to have an affinity for different, you know, instruments, right? And then fast forward to today, he plays every instrument. Like he plays bass, he plays guitar, he plays lap steel, he can play mandolin, he plays banjo, and they all have different nuances with them. So the point I'm trying to make is that over the years of him pursuing all of these different instruments and then getting into each genre for an amount of time, like, hey, I want to buy a mandolin. So he'd buy a mandolin, and then he would spend the next 2 or 3 months listening to all songs that had mandolin in it, from Zeppelin to Fleetwood Mac to the, you know, and find out all these things, start researching on YouTube, mandolin, what are mandolin riffs? What are mandolin, you know, fingerings? What are different shapes you can play on mandolin? Until he exhausted that to where he could play all that stuff on mandolin. Same thing with banjo. How do you do this picking? How do you finger pick? How do you do this? How do you play these things? What are some scales? What do you practice? And then he would just dedicate, you know, hundreds of hours to practicing on every instrument in those, you know, genres and different capacities, until he would then say, hey, oh, check out this cool thing and check out that cool thing, to now where he starts writing his own music. He has maybe 6 or 7 different genres to pull from, you know, finger picking to bluegrass to stuff he worked on with banjo to different shapes that like Foo Fighters might play, you know, or different kind of chords, or the Lifeson chord, like from Hemispheres and Rush, you know, is another sort of, you know, way of fingering, or it's a shape. And then he would just keep working on different stuff. So evolving and evolving. And I've always supported him whenever he's done anything, you know, so I couldn't teach him anything other than drums, right? And rhythm and music and time and how to listen and how to have an ear. So what I did was, both my kids growing up, we would jam in the room, but since I couldn't teach them notes, like I couldn't tell you what chord you were playing, right? But I could tell you, hey, put this part with this part, or play that a little quieter and have dynamics here and listen to what that part could be. And this guy's playing bass. And then Cole would have an opportunity to jam. Me and him and Chase would jam together. Or sometimes I would have friends of mine come over to play and Cole would sit in. So he would get some experience of playing, you know, just jamming or playing songs. Say, hey, we're going to learn a couple covers. And he would get to sit in and play, you know, with like live musicians, right, at a young age. And then now when I play out with the band, he'll come up and he'll play, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 songs. You know, he'll back up this one. He'll play acoustic on this. He'll play 12 string. He'll play bass on a couple songs. So I'm trying to incorporate him now into, like, when we do the summer gigs and we have these bigger stages and we have just like a 2-hour show, and we're going to go up and just do it. Now that we have a new front man and he plays great, you know, killer harmonica and percussion, but he's not a guitar player. So now there's certain songs that could use that second guitar, you know, that Ken used to play on. So now we may substitute Cole into that. So he may get an opportunity to play on, you know, maybe 10 or 12 gigs over the summer, you know, on like large stage with a professional sound system, you know, with his own rig and get to sit in with the band, you know, while constantly evolving. And now he's writing original music and, you know, I'm putting drums to it. We're writing lyrics and we're doing melodies, and it's just an ongoing process. But I think the point after this long-winded explanation is that if you have the desire and the motivation, you know, to persevere, to get better at something, and you have that genuine interest and it sparks something in you, if you really do the research and consistently apply the time, like we always say, consistently work on it, mm-hmm. you know, as the years go by, all of a sudden in 3, 4, 5 years, you can be very proficient at a lot of different things because you've put in thousands of hours working on it. You know, and that's the one thing I'll say, like where Cole may have, say, a dozen instruments down here, mm-hmm. he'll rotate through them all. Like everyone gets touched over the course of a month. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's never a time where the Rick doesn't get played, or the 12 string, or the lap steel, or the mandolin, or the banjo. You know, he'll always break out something just to keep his chops up on those different instruments. And then, you know, playing stuff with a capo now to hear that has a different feel to it, you know, and different sound. So it's really cool and exciting for me to be part of the journey of music with both my boys. And, you know, they're music fans. So they go to concerts, you know, and they see different things, but they're, you know, Cole collects vinyls. So he's got, you know, 500 or so of everything from, you know, Joni Mitchell and Harry Chapin to Boston to Metallica to Foo to, you know, to you name it. Like, it's just a gamut of such a wide exposure of music that he's introduced me to music that I really wasn't even familiar with or didn't even know about, you know, just from him investigating things and saying like, oh, then try this out. Or, you know, harmonica is a whole nother story, right? You started playing harmonica. Now it's like Toots Thielemann. And then you got to look up this guy. And you have to look up, you know, John Papa and all these different harmonica players. And then there's a whole, you know, 6 month, you know, journey that he delved into just playing harmonica. And then would be playing like, Isn't She, you know, Wonderful, Stevie Wonder, right? Or play Whamma Jamma by, you know, Jay Giles with Magic Dick, right? And all these different things just to say, hey, I'm exposing myself to all these different genres of music again, because a blues harp is different than Stevie Wonder plays harp, which is different than Billy Joel plays harp, which is different than Bruce plays harp. You know what I mean? So you listen to all those different exposures and music, you know, it's just different influences. So now you have more to draw from. It's like a vocabulary, right? So if you take lessons and you learn, you become a student of music, even if you never take a lesson, but you're on YouTube and you investigate things and you learn and push yourself to learn them, you know, it's, you're just expanding your vocabulary, no different than if you had a conversation with someone, you know, who has a first grade education or someone who's got a master's degree. You know, it's going to be two different conversations. Well, musically, it could be the same thing, right? You say you play with a one-year-old because it's someone that's new to the instrument. They don't have a large vocabulary, right? And they don't have a large well to draw from, and they don't have a tremendous amount of experience of which to, you know, to be able to contribute to the situation. But if they have good ears and they're listening and they're open-minded, you know, over time, they will develop that, you know, by being a student of the instrument. So that's really important, to develop your vocabulary and be exposed to stuff so that when you are in the context of having a musical conversation, you have something valuable to contribute to it, right? And you're not just keeping time, or you're not just, you know, struggling along. And if you're a younger player and you're not, you know, proficient yet, try playing with people that are better than you, that, you know, force you to get better and to be able to hang with them and pick up tricks from them and always be open-minded and don't have an ego, you know. And even when you do become established and you have great chops and you are proficient and you've been doing it for a long time, you know, you just never have an ego, because that's really the derailer, you know?
Yeah. 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 Well, you said an awful lot of things there, so it's hard for me to kind of reel this back in, but I wanted to kind of hone in on just the education part of it, specifically, and like,
well, you did ask me how my boys got here, Steve, so I couldn't just say they worked real hard and jammed a lot.
Next question, please. But you brought through the whole entire thing, yeah. So I don't have any more questions about it now.
I'm thorough.
Yeah. So, but how do you? I mean, did they take? Did they have? You know, you talked about they had band and they had to do marching if they wanted to be in band. But was there any a music theory kind of option in school for them?
Yeah, there's their grammar school. They had to take, like, if you were in school band, you had to play Hot Cross Buns, and, you know, you started with a recorder and then you graduated.
No, I don't mean performance. I mean theory. Like, did they, like, sit down with books and learn theory?
Yes, that was part of school band.
Okay,
that was part of their agenda. It wasn't just, you know, the performance of that. It was learning all about that and learning how to read music and what the notes meant and the theory behind it and being able to. But I'll tell you honestly, like I said, Cole learned more about theory from YouTube than he did in school, you know, by investigating things.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, when we were kids going to school, we didn't have YouTube or the internet to look up.
Yeah,
so correct. That is kind of an advantage of today's
Big time, youth, big know. Time.
And you know, the kids have to want to be interested in it. I think, I mean, I had to, for me, I took music theory in high school and it was an elective. It wasn't, you know, mandatory, obviously. So it was only, you know, people who wanted to do it that were going to be taking.
Sure.
So I guess it's the same. I don't know if that's like just a, so my music theory class really had nothing to do with my instrument or performance or anything. Like, we didn't do that in theory. And it was just, you know, we had our notebooks with staff paper and, you know, we would learn. And then when I took theory in college, it was the same, but it was also ear training, sight singing, you know, all sorts of things like that. And I don't know if they get that comprehensive anymore in school. I'm not sure if they do.
I hope so, but I'm not sure.
But how do you think for your kids, since they went through all this, you know, and they're older now, how do you think, what do you think the benefits are in general in like the rest of life from having a music education? What do you think, how do you think that has helped them, if in any ways?
Well, I think one way is that they've learned an appreciation for music, right? And they both listen to a lot of music. And that creates a lot of good memories for different times in their life where you can remember, like, when Chase was in baseball, for example, right? I remember a whole season of travel baseball where we listened to Foo Fighters' Wasting Light. Like, that was the CD that we had in the car. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we used to listen to that album up and down, sing along to it. You know what I mean? And it became, like, you know, 10 years later, for in my birthday one year, Chase gets me that on vinyl, you know, to add to Cole's collection, right? Like, so it's like a keepsake, right? So the music and that, and same thing with Cole, we shared, you know, at both my boys, we shared concerts together, and we've gone to events, you know, and seen bands, and it's been, you know, a lot of fun in that way. You know, they have an appreciation for it, different, you know, appreciations for it. Like I said, Cole more so because he has the gift of music in him, you know, and the ability and the talent and the drive and the motivation, he'll always have the pleasure of being able to create music, right? Because he can play every instrument. So he can play, you know, anything and create, you know, sit down at the piano and create something there, or play harmonica and create something there, or sit down on the banjo and create something there. So I think for him, it gives back that, just that creative element and that outlet of, you know, 12 string, 6 string, bass, electric guitar, you know, and just like you see the studio behind me, to have that at his disposal, you know, for as long as he can. And then when he has his own place someday, he'll have his own studio, right? So, I mean, that's really the legacy. He'll carry it on to hopefully then someday his kids, my grandkids, will then have, you know, that same gift of music. Like, he'll carry it forward, you know, as will Chase, because they've been exposed to it. You know, and now it's something, like I said, you know, for me, like you see with drums, it's the same thing for, you know, Cole. He'll buy instruments, you know, double neck guitar and this thing and mm-hmm. that thing and, you know, sitar, mandolin. And so I think in that way, they get the pleasure of being able to, you know, play and enjoy making music. Right. And that's but they're also, like I said, huge fans of music. So they appreciate, you know, a good song, and they both have incredibly diverse listening, you know, styles and likes and dislikes for what they, you know, their musical tastes are. So that's interesting too.
Okay. So I want to show you, since you're not familiar with this and other people can see this, I want to show you Vaughn's Facebook page here, and kind of what I was trying to steer you here towards. But, you know, stuff he says, like this one says, if we're preparing young people to succeed in the world that awaits, the best thing we can do is put them in musical ensembles. They learn discipline, understanding, compassion, preparedness, collective responsibility, and cause and effect. Music learning is holistic learning. So, I mean, have you seen...
Definitely.
You know, like, have you seen things like that with your kids, like learning music in other ways that are apart from music? That has helped them, benefited them in life?
Sure. I mean, you know, just the confidence that comes from, you know, successful, like when you see yourself progressing, you know, that carries over to, like I said, academics. Like, you know, if you can put that effort into learning an instrument, you put that effort into studying, if you put that effort into practicing for sports, you know, if you put that practice into, you know, the discipline of anything, like, you know, Chase is now a strength and conditioning coach, right? So the discipline, and like you speak of here, you know, he's been disciplined to where, you know, he works out, you know, 6-7 days a week, you know, every day he eats what the diet he's supposed to eat, you know, it's part of his, you know, his routine now and his DNA of what he does. And, you know, like I said, the compassion too, you know, to be moved by music, to be able to listen to something and say, that sounds beautiful. You know, mm-hmm. I think it also opens us up to, you know, as men, we can say things like that and not have to be tough all the time, you know? So you know, you don't have to always listen to, you know, to heavy metal to be cool. You know, there's other forms of music that you can appreciate and listen to, mm-hmm. you know? And like I said, so I think in other parts of their life, like, yeah, it's responsibility. Like you said, it's also, it's all those things, right? Cause like when you are in a band, like in an ensemble like that, you know, the night of a concert, like you have to be there at a certain time, you know, it's organized. You have to be here. Like everyone has to play it together. You have to be in tune, right? It's collective responsibility to where the guy next to you is not cutting it. You got to coach him up a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. because you're only as good as the weakest guy in the band. So it teaches you that stuff carries over to sports, right? Like the weakest guy on the team, you know, and how do you expose the weaknesses?
Right.
So,
all right.
Yeah. I think it carries over to a lot.
Yeah, so let's look at a couple more here of Vaughn's posts. He says, if you like singing, awesome. If you like playing an instrument, awesome. If you like making music by yourself, awesome. If you like making it with others, awesome. If it's not perfect, awesome. However you make music and whoever you make it with, it's all about enjoyment. That's one of his posts here. And again, he's, you know, a treasure trove of wisdom here about education. Let me find another good one. This is great. Music education is life education, he says. Learning a musical instrument is to learn about yourself. Making music is to make a better version of yourself. Being part of a music ensemble is being part of something that will educate you holistically. There's nothing like music education. He's got hundreds of these kind of quotes here. This is a good one. For the child who doesn't like speaking in front of others yet will sing their heart out. For the child who's misunderstood in the playground yet embraced in a music ensemble. For the child who struggles in the classroom yet flourishes on stage. Music is for every child. He once said, when I did the interview, he said he thinks that everybody is a musician, and he approaches his teaching that way. And I used to say, and maybe you and I both used to say it, that I used to say anyway, that I think everybody either plays music or wants to play music. But he takes it one step further and he says, everybody is a musician. And you kind of see it like with the popularity of the singing shows, you know, how many thousands or hundreds of thousands of people come out. Like, I can sing and try to get on this show to be a star.
But that's the enjoyment of the journey, right? That's the joy and the pleasure of doing it, right? It's relinquishing the fear, right, of the rejection or not being good enough and just doing it.
Right. And I mean, there's so much value in getting music education early on. So Lee says, interesting topic. I started on the trumpet at age 10. Played in elementary school band, junior high and high school band, took private lessons, and amazingly never heard a word about it. Let's see. He goes on to say, theory, intervals, or anything of the kind. After playing guitar for many years, finally went back on YouTube and explored theory. Best thing he ever did. Yeah. Yeah.
That's because I think in the beginning, Stephen, again, I never played, you know, instrument like guitar or piano, you know, but like, I think when you're learning chords, you know, you have to learn the theory behind it too, right? But mm-hmm. if you're just learning how to play an instrument or strum, it's like anything else, right? When you learn how to play drums, the first thing you're learning is like how to throw the stick, right? How to get it to bounce back, how it reacts with its environment, you know, how a bass drum feels, how you use your foot, how the hi-hat works, you know? Those are like elementary things, no different than this is how you hold a guitar, this is how you hold the pick, right?
Right, sure.
This is what you put your fingers on this chord, and this is a C chord, right? Or this is a G, whatever the chord is, and they're practicing that, right? So I think the theory part comes later once you're established to that point. Right, because it's way different if you come to me and say, I've never played drums, I want to learn how to play drums, or if you come to me and say, I've been playing drums for 5 years, but I want to get better. Mm-hmm. You know, those are two completely different approaches, right?
Yeah, I feel like, and I know this from being in theory in college, that, you know, there were a lot of people who played drums or percussion that weren't a chordal type of instrument, but they still had to learn. You know, theory. They had to learn how to chart songs. They had to learn what we did in high school. In theory, we had to write 4-part harmony passages. We had to actually write them out, you know, on sheet music, and come up with our own thing and know what we were doing. But I think when you get out into the real world and you start playing in bands and stuff, it really helps you to communicate with other people and understand what other people are talking about. And I think specifically for drummers who don't play an instrument with chords or notes or anything like that, it's still kind of important to know that stuff. And I feel like there's a wall or something that hinders communication and understanding when you don't know this stuff. Like, so, you know, I'm not going to say anybody specific, but working with other musicians when they don't understand, you know, keys, you know, they don't understand like transposing, what that means, what the importance of it is, you know, kind of basic theory stuff. It kind of hinders progress. And you know, I'm really more of an advocate of, like Vaughn is, of everybody should learn music as a kid, you know, and then if you get into it in a professional sense, then you have that vocabulary and you have that understanding, regardless of what kind of instrument you play. So no, I'm not a drummer, but I know, you know, rudiments, I understand them, and I can speak the language to a drummer because I learned it, but I don't do it, but I still learned it anyway. So I think it's my opinion anyway. I think it's important for everybody to kind of get at least a general basic knowledge of music theory, regardless of what instrument you play. You know?
No, it's definitely important. I mean, like you said, most important if you play a chorded instrument, because many times at band, they'll say, hey, what are you playing there? Is that a B? And he'll say, well, it's really a C chord, but there's a G diminished under it, you know? Yeah. So this could be the root and maybe not the root. And what are you playing and what's he playing, you know? And it's interesting to watch that all come, you know, together as far as speaking the language, right? So I could see that if you played a chorded instrument and you were not familiar with the language or understood it, it'd be very hard to, you know, you can just say, I don't know, I'm just playing this because it sounds like what I learned off the record, you know, but not having any idea of what that is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've played definitely with guitar players and guitar players and that don't know any theory, that they just like that. They like, you know, I know how it sounds. Like I can hear the sound and I can replicate it
and they can play it, right?
But they don't know necessarily what they're doing. And I think that's super important to at least learn basic music theory. If you're going to play music,
yeah,
you know. And
I would agree. It's almost like saying, though, Steve, it's like, you know, should every drummer know how to play with a click, right?
Yes.
Like you know, there's a lot of, yes. There's a lot of drummers out there that don't play to a click, never have played to a click, right? Who play in a cover band and have been successfully for many years and never played to a click.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, like you're talking about like diminished chords and blah, 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 blah. That's a little more advanced theory. I'm talking like just basic music theory, like knowing, you know, the difference between a major and minor scale. And, you know, for as far as rhythm and percussion is concerned, every musician should know how to play with a click. I mean, that's super important. If you ever end up working in the studio and you have to play along with a click track, and you've never done it before, it's gonna be fun. Yeah, it's gonna take a minute for you to get it together. So I mean, timing is super important in music. So everybody,
it's the most important.
Yeah,
and again, consistency. If you play with a click consistently, like you know where 120 is, you know where 150 is, or where it's supposed to be at, or you know the tempo of a song, 9 times out of 10. You know, you'll be rock solid in there. Even if you're changing the click to the next song as you're starting that song, you know, when you're keeping the groove going and you start that next song, typically you'll be right on the money, you know?
Right.
Or if something happens to the click and it stops from it, you keep going and then the click starts up again, you'll still be in sync with it, you know, just because it becomes ingrained.
Yeah.
And that's super important.
Yeah.
Like I said, that timing is really everything with the feel.
Yeah. And just learning things the right way in the beginning will really carry you far. And I equate that to like how I learn songs. When I learn a song, I don't just learn my bass part. I learn the song. I learn the structure of the song. How many bars is the chorus? How many bars is the solo? You know, what the general tempo is, or if not the exact tempo. I learn the song. And in doing it that way, I retain that information much better. So even if I don't play it for you know, a week or a month or several months, when I do get to play it, that all comes back, because I created a deep ravine in my brain of that information, because I learned it the right way. You know, I studied, mm-hmm. I studied the song, you know, and I don't find, at least in my circle, that a lot of people approach it that way. There are some that do, and there's some that do it way better than me too. But I don't think everybody does. And I think if you're playing in a band in a professional level, that's something that's important. The way you learn, not just learning, but it's the way you learn things. Yeah. Cause I see, like, I watch Idol, American Idol, and I was watching last night and just kind of studying the band, the house band, and those cats are super pro, and they have to know everything about theory and music and stuff, because they're playing, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 maybe new songs every week.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So, you know, they're reading charts and stuff, but, you know,
that's their job, right?
That's job.
What you gotta do.
Yeah. They have to know their shit, you know?
And listen, and that's a whole nother, you know, like you said, playing to a click is one thing, but sight reading, right? I mean, they say, like, Vinnie Caliuta used to be extremely proficient at sight reading, and then so good at that he was already reading ahead and improvising and changing, you know what I mean? Like subtly nuancing the parts, not like playing along with them reading, struggling to keep up, you know, like reading it so fluently that you're just like, oh, this part's coming, so I'm going to do this little thing and do this fill into that part, and I'll do a stick, you know, like you've already like deciphered, you've read it down once and you've understood it, and then you may run it down once with the band, and then, okay, let's record it. And then it's it, and then you move on. It's not like, let me do it 15 more times because I missed that part, or I got to get that together. You know, they just play it, and it's just a talent, you know?
Right.
And I remember, like, if you see the thing with the Zappa interview, when he says he went up and Frank would say, well, play this. And he put a chart up and say, well, play that. Then he would say, well, I'm going to play this thing. And he would say, you know, copy me and do something with that. And then he'd say, okay, stand over there. Like, just go over there and wait. Like, I'll get back to you.
Right.
And then he went over there and the other guy was standing there and said, well, I guess, you know, it's a good thing that we're standing here, because he's been through about 10 drummers and about 15 other guys, and they've all not lasted like a minute. So he says, so we're the longest guys that have been here, who he told us to go wait on the side.
Mm, yeah.
Then he said a couple hours went by, and then he came up and he's just like, all right, boys, you're in the band. Let's go get dinner.
There you go.
You know, there you go. There you have it.
Yeah. I mean, if you're playing at that level, like Frank Zappa level, you got to know your stuff. You know, that's.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's some serious, you know, music knowledge, right? Yeah. There
like I'm gonna put up a raw piece of sight music in front, you know, sheet music in front of you, and you're gonna play it, ready, 2, 3, 4, and it's not like dun, 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 you know what I mean, it's like bap, boop,
ba-da-da-da-da-doop, right,
so it's all, you know, and make up a groove to that, like not just sight read it, but you know what I mean, like figure it out,
right?
So yeah, on the spot, and you know, and there are people that can do it, but again, like Vaughn said, super prepared, right? Vinny said he was super prepared for anything he went on. Totally studied it, understood it. Like if it was sight reading, yeah, like delved into sight reading for a year and just did that. You know what I mean? To get it to where it was like a master of it. Right. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have to put some care into it. And, you know, just in the cover band world, I think that's, it's a little bit lacking in, you know, in the education field, you know, people learn how to play a song. They learn how to play songs, but they don't really know a lot about the song, the anatomy of the song, or the, mm-hmm. the anatomy of just music in general. And I'd like to see more of that. So I really like to see guys like Vaughn who are really pushing music education on schools and parents and people like you, who, you know, introduced it to your kids at a young age and gave them an opportunity to learn themselves and to find themselves, to figure out who they are through that. You know, that's priceless. you know, and
yeah, and I was fortunate to have that upbringing too, right? So I was able to share that with them, as well as, you know, the band I'm in now currently too, you know, even at an older age, but being a music educator, you know, my whole life, you have that nurturing, you know, habit and kind of, you know, perspective on things. So it's easy when you see a situation to say, like, hey, we're going to play the songs to a click because you're playing everything too fast, or hey, sit back more in the pocket there, or don't play so aggressively during there. Like, you start to have all these subtle nuances, not like coaching just because you're used to doing it, right? Not like in a way like, hey, you shouldn't be playing that like that way, but just say, hey, you know, I've noticed you're playing it this way, or that song doesn't really go that way if you listen to it, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a cool thing too, where other people will call someone else out and say, it really doesn't go like that. What are you playing there? And then the theory, you know, conversation starts. But when you care and you spend the time and you coach and you nurture in a positive and encouraging way, the results are pretty, you know, phenomenal, to where you see big improvement and you see a better product than what you started with, right? So it really does work if you put the time in. And I can tell you firsthand, I've witnessed it over the past, you know, 3 years, and you say, oh, 3 years. Dude, the three, four years went very quickly, but continuous progress, little at a time, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Cumulatively now, oh, wow, now all of a sudden everything is elevated, you know, right? Tide raises all ships type mentality.
Right.
It's like everyone keeps, you know, pushing each other to get better and do more, you know, and it shows, you know, and it's a payoff. So you definitely reap what you sow.
Yeah.
But you got, you know, if you're just going to half-ass it, it's always going to be that way, right? And again, to your point, it's, you know, it's all about your own personal journey and how, you know, what you want to get out of it, right? And we enjoy playing music. It's a blessing to us. Like you said, there's people that play music and people that want to play music.
Right.
So if you're a person that plays music, respect that gift. And like we always say on, you know, on our podcast, like, make a commitment to be the best that you can of your instrument. Don't, you know, you have a duty to that talent to, you know, to really nurture your talent, you know, to the best of your abilities. Right.
And never stop learning. You know, you're never going to get a completely full education. You're always going to be able to learn something new. And if you strive for it, then that's going to make you all that much better at your craft. You know, your whatever your craft is, you know, you always want to kind of learn something new, learn from another person, listen to a different kind of music. You know, whatever, go see bands play, figure out what they're doing. It never ends, you know, so music education is a lifelong journey.
Yeah, and you never stop learning, like you said, right?
Yes. All right, good topic. I like talking about that, and thank you for talking all about your children, and again, thank you for doing that, you know, just being a great father and giving these kids the opportunity to explore, you know, as you have. And
well, thanks for having me, Steve, and give me the opportunity to share with you tonight my journey. No, it's definitely a blessing, like I said, you know, but you get out of it what you put into it, right? So I mean, there's an opportunity there. Like I said, we're a musical family, so right. You know, figure the apple wouldn't fall far from the tree. But it's definitely exciting and rewarding to see that, like you said, when you do put in the time. And now I get to, you know, make music with my boys, right? Especially with Cole.
Yeah.
I get to play drums and you know, write songs with him and play musical director and engineer and use all the software in the studio. So it's kind of like being in my 20s again, you know?
Yeah, that's
doing
cool.
Original music and making, you know, making up songs and, you know, writing lyrics and coming up with melodies and, you know, piecing stuff together and getting excited. Like, oh, wait to hear, dude, in like 2 weeks, we'll have a demo of like the first song, you know, and I'll let you hear a copy of it. You know, it's like, you know, the feeling is like when you're first getting your first songs together and you're like all giddy about it.
Yeah.
So that's been fun to like revisit that, because, you know, it's almost like through that whole journey, you know, when you're in your 20s, you have a certain perspective on life and you have a certain way that you go about things. And then once you have a family and you have kids, you know, at least for me, you dedicate a lot of yourself to that.
Mm.
But then after 25 years later, believe it or not, right, then you get your freedom back again, because now you've raised, you know, responsible adults, right, that share the same values as you. And hopefully they have some, like I said, talents or things you could do like music.
Mm.
And now it's like, now I get to enjoy that part of it too, because now I could get to jam with them and play fun, you know. So it's like I get, you know, you put it on pause for a long time, you know, to do your parental duties, but then when the boomerang comes back around again, it's like you do get to reap all that, you know, you get that time back again.
Yeah.
So that's cool to see that, you know. But no, appreciate all the kind words, and like I said, it's you know, you are what you live, right? You got to put in the effort. You know, if you don't, you know, if I just said to my kids, go play video games, I'm too busy.
Right.
You know,
right.
Then they wouldn't be exposed to it. Right. So it's like anyone out there who's, you know, a parent to kids, like try to motivate them to do things, because the time goes by fast. You know, 3 years of playing video games against, you know, 3 years of playing a sport or playing music or studying art or drawing a picture or pursuing something productive. You know, like you said, it's something you'll carry with you for the rest of your life.
Right. Right. It's a skill, and it really bleeds into everything else in your life. So good stuff. All right.
Yeah, and it colors the fabric of who you are too. You know, it gives you a different perspective on how to look at the world.
Yeah. All right. You want to learn more stuff about maybe getting your band out there and building a following, get into the show.com.
Get into the show.
The link is in the description for that. That's my ebook. And coverbandcentral.com is where you can find all the stuff. Like the past episodes of this podcast, they're all there available.
All 212 of them.
Yeah, and articles and memes and all good stuff there. And yeah, and that's it. A wrap for this week. We'll see you next time.